Here's a brief Ramban with a lot to teach us. There's a lot going on in just a few lines. You know, of course, the last week's Sedra and Va'era were 7 out of the 10 Makas, and the last 3 appear here in Parshas Bo, opening with Arba. That's Parshas Bo begins with HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling Moshe Rabbeinu to head off to Paro. Bo El Paro, come to Paro. And you're going to tell him about Arba. And the pasuk opens by telling us, Yechbad Yez Libo Lev Avadav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu that I have hardened his heart. A very famous discussion that the Rambam and other Rishonim have about that. You know, we all thought that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us free will. We all thought, as the Rambam presents, that Bechir Chashas is one of the Ikari Amuna. It's one of the Ikarim. It's not a statement about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, unlike the 1390 Mammons, but it's a statement about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu created people. And it goes hand in hand, as the Rambam explains, with the idea of Schar V'Onesh, which is Ani Mamin number 11. HaKadosh Baruch Hu not only is aware of our actions, but responds to our actions, and there are positive and negative consequences to our actions. Our Rambam says, clearly, how could there be positive and negative consequences if we're just robots, if we're not making real decisions? So the Psukim say, at this point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is being machbid leiv paro. The Rambam has a discussion about how that works. The Rambam says this is exceptional. This generally have Bechir Chafshis. Maybe here this was part of the punishment for past sin, is that now you lose your Bechir Chafshis. That's a larger conversation for a different time. But as we're going to see, the Ramban seems to assume that perhaps HaKadosh Baruch Hu had hardened Paro's heart somewhat, but at the same time, he still had some freedom. Some freedom to choose. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu shows up, and the Ramban specifically focuses on Pasuk Vav. Moshe Rabbeinu, at that point, Moshe Rabbeinu has already come to Paro. Moshe Rabbeinu tells Paro, Kadosh Baruch Hu was planning to bring Arba. Hini, maybe Machar Arba, maybe Vulecha. And then, what happens for the first time with Arba is that Moshe Rabbeinu leaves. Vayifen vayetze me'im Paro. And then a conversation ensues between the members of Paro's court. This we've never really seen before. This is something new. Vayomer avdei Paro elav. After Moshe Rabbeinu leaves, a part of Avon said to him, "Amasa Yezalanu Mokesh. For how much longer are you going to deal with this? For how much longer is this Moshe Rabbeinu going to be a cause of distress for Mitzrayim? Let them leave. Shalachas Hanashim, and let them go. And in Pasuk Ches, by Yushavas Moshe Ves Aaron El Paro, Moshe and Aaron are brought back to Paro. They had already left, and they're called back in. And now Paro responds. The Paro says, "Go." Go, l'chu ivdu. At this point, negotiation begins. And the Paro says, "Why don't you go and tell me who's going to leave?" And Moshe Rabbeinu says, "We're all going. B'darein v'zkeneinu, b'vanein v'vnoseinu. The men, the women, the old, the young. We're taking our animals along." And Paro says, "No, one second." Paro starts to negotiate. He says, "Yeah, the adult men can go. Everyone else is staying." So they don't reach an agreement, and Moshe Rabbeinu walks out a second time, and now Arba ensues. So the Ramban comments on this Vayifen Vayetze. The fact that Moshe Rabbeinu leaves, he delivers his message, and he walks out. Vayifen Vayetze Im Paro, here in Pasuk Vav, Ramban says, Ba'avur shepachadu mimenu bibarad. People were very scared at the end of Parshas Va'era. The Mitzrayim were terrified of the Barad. They were all under attack. So Chashav Moshe Shivchadu Gam Ata Shiyamusu Barav. Im yovdu yeser ha-pleita nesharas lehem. Moshe Rabbeinu realized that this would also be incredibly frightening. The locust. But also, they're going to be incredibly frightened. Why would they be frightened? So at first blush, we're not farmers. So we would say, the hail, maybe it was dangerous. People get hit by the hail. But then why would they be so frightened of the locust? Okay, it's annoying. You walk outside and you're covered with grasshoppers. Why a pachad? So the answer is no. It's a question of starvation. It's not just a question that grasshoppers are annoying. They're going to eat everything up. And that's how Parshas Va'era had ended. Parshas Va'era had ended with a description of which plants had been destroyed by the previous Makkah, by Barad, and which not. The Psukim explained in the fifth to last Pasuk in Va'era, Perek Tes Pasuk Lamed Aleph, that some crops, ripen earlier than others, so the flax and the barley that were already more developed, they got destroyed by the bara. But the wheat, which wasn't really ready yet, it was still younger and softer, so it had not been destroyed. That had still survived. As a matter of fact, the Ramban uses that to start figuring out when this happened. He says maybe it was the month of Adar. Couldn't have been that long before Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Makkah of Barad, because the barley was already ready. But the wheat wasn't ready. So the wheat wasn't destroyed. So that's what the Psukim say in Parshat Bo. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu just said. The Ochalas Yeser HaPleita, Sharas Lechem HaBar, it's going to destroy, the Arba will destroy whatever was left over from Barad. So it's going to destroy anything that's growing on the trees. So Moshe Rabbeinu realizes, and Moshe included that for a reason, because this is absolutely terrifying. Grasshoppers are going to cause mass starvation throughout Mitzrayim. There'll be no food left to eat. Food doesn't actually grow in supermarket shelves. Nor does food grow on Amazon Fresh trucks, despite what we city slickers might think. Food grows on farms. So if everything is destroyed, no one's going to eat. This is a critical moment. These last couple of makos, as Rambam points, are happening the end of winter, the beginning of spring, just when the key crops are developing. So it's going to be a 1-2 punch. Barad and then Arba. Mitzrayim won't survive. They won't have any food. So that's why, says Ramban, Moshe, this is a drop the mic moment. Moshe Rabbeinu realizes the message he just delivered is terrifying. It's going to be locusts, kfat, nothing left to eat. The yatsa below reshuso terim shi'anuhu hein olav. He realizes that what he said is incredibly frightening, and then he just walks out without taking leave. He left the royal court without following protocol. He didn't want to hear an answer. Why didn't he want to hear an answer? If he's so frightened, why doesn't he want to hear an answer? So the Rabban says there's an incredible amount of psychological awareness, very high emotional intelligence that Moshe Rabbeinu is displaying. Kadeshis Yatsu Bedavar. He left so that they could have a conversation. Because he realized that if Paro is on the spot, number one, Paro is going to have to talk tough. And number two, Paro may not really think it through and he's just going to say no. So Moshe Rabbeinu Bedavka didn't even give Paro the chance to answer. He steps away so that they could think about it. And Chashav Machshavos Emes. He said before, Chashav Moshe. Moshe thought that they would be very frightened and therefore he chose to leave right away. And Rabban says he was correct. He guessed right. His assessment, rather, wasn't merely a guess. His assessment of the situation was absolutely accurate. Ki chein asav. That's exactly what happened. He walks out, and Paro's yoatzim begin to push back. Amar lo Paro, terem tedei gav de Mitzrayim. Then he realizes Mitzrayim is going to be lost. If the Arba comes, there'll be nothing left to eat. So Ramban says, Moshe Rabbeinu understood that this would probably happen. And then he quotes a Shmos Rabba, he saw them looking at each other. he was reading the body language, and he sees it wasn't just Paro. Paro is on the throne, but all the chevra, all the advisors, the entire court, they're standing surrounding him, sitting, standing surrounding him. And Moshe Rabbeinu saw that they were looking at each other. Moshe Rabbeinu could tell. The body language was clear. Raos and Shapon Zelzeh, they're turning to one another. Ma'aminim Lidvarav. The members of Paro's court believe what he's saying. So that's why Yatsa Misham Kedei Shitlu Eitzalas is Tshuva. So he left in order for a conversation to ensue. So that's what he quotes from the Shmos Rabbah. That it was this time that Moshe Rabbeinu chose to leave. Rabban had originally theorized, maybe just Moshe Rabbeinu realized that the message would elicit such a response. And the Shmos Rabbah suggests that he actually saw them. He could see from the nonverbal cues that they were responding in that way. Rabban himself goes on to say, let's say the Rabban himself thinks I'll be pshuto, and then I want to circle back to this approach, this first approach again. Hanochem ve'einar Rabban says ki chen ayose becholis bo paro el heichalo. Rabban says the truth is, I believe that this happened every single time he came to Paro. Masrebo ve'yotzei milafanav. He would deliver his message and he would walk out. Earlier, Rabban said, "Oh, he left without rishus, and this is unique. This is the first time." Rabban says the truth is maybe he always left without rishus. Oh, he wasn't mashubit to Paro. But here the Torah had to mention it because this time Moshe is actually brought back. So one or two key points in the Ramban's Nachum Ve'inai, then I want to circle back to mine another layer of the first approach. What this Nachum Ve'inai is pointing out is that the reason to assume this time was different is because this is the first time that it's mentioned, Vayifan Vayetse Me'im Paro. Never before did we hear that language. So the first approach to Ramban, which is rooted ultimately in the Shmos Rabbah, is that this was the first time he ever did it, and we need to figure out why. For the first approach, the Kasha is why. For the second approach, the Kasha is why not. For the first approach, the Kasha is why did Moshe choose to act differently this time than last time? And the answer is, well, there was something about this message that was particularly frightening. There was something about, he noticed from the behavior, from the nonverbal cues of the members of Paro's court, that this time it would be productive to walk out and give them time to talk. For the second approach to Ramban, the question is why not? Not why didn't Moshe do something? Moshe did the same thing every time. Then the question is, why didn't the Torah mention it before? Why was it only here the Torah was mazkirit and never mazkirit before? And the key word is hutzrach. Hutzrach hakas v'haskir zebekan. Here the Torah needed to tell me, and this goes back to a point we've seen many times in different contexts. Ultimately, goes back to that core methodological Gemara in Megillah Daf Yudalit. Nevur shehutzrach hudaros nichteva, nevur shelo hutzrach hudaros lo nichteva. That the only things that make into Tanakh are the things that are hutzrichu, that are of eternal significance. Just because it's not recorded in the Tanakh does not mean it didn't happen. And it's self-evident. The vast majority of Moshe's life, the vast majority of Yosef's life, obviously is not recorded directly in the Chumash. The Ramban understands it's even true within an individual episode. The Torah might describe Moshe Rabbeinu speaking to Paro about Arov or Shrin and not give every last bit of the story. For instance, it won't mention that Moshe turned on his heel and left without taking permission. He says, that always happened. It's not a kasha that wasn't mentioned before. Many things happened. There may have been a lot more verbiage as well. There may have been maybe more of the conversation that is recorded. The Torah only gives clips those bits which are as a matter of fact, the Ramban mentions this later as well. In the beginning of a Perek Yud Aleph, he says, he uses the language of a kitzur b'sipurim. He says, there too, the Torah won't always tell me, Hashem told Moshe XYZ. Moshe told Paro XYZ. or Moshe told Klal Yisrael X, Y, Z. Sometimes you only hear one or the other. The Torah doesn't need to repeat everything. It's rare, it's striking, that in the context of the Mishkan, we actually hear Hashem telling Moshe, then you hear Moshe, you know, telling Klal Yisrael, at least someone Moshe tells Klal Yisrael, and then you hear Klal Yisrael actually, the details of Klal Yisrael actually fulfilling it. That's unique. That's rare. The Torah isn't going to be redundant. The Torah is only going to mention those pieces which are relevant. So that's what the Ramban says here in the second approach. Moshe Rabbeinu always left right away. But it was, this is the first time that we hear Vayifin Ve'etzei Be'im Paro, because it sets us up for the Vayushav Es Moshe Ves Aharon. In order to appreciate that the result of the conversation that Paro's courtiers have with him is that they bring Moshe and Aharon back. The Torah has to tell me that they left. So that's the second approach. And again, that highlights the fact, this idea of Kitzur B'Psukim, which Ramban speaks of explicitly again later in Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, and is working with throughout Chumash. Now, the Torah is going to only give me certain episodes. The Torah is only going to give me certain parts of certain episodes. Those elements which are Hutzur Chuladar, the fact that it's not mentioned in the past doesn't mean it didn't happen in the past. But let's circle back to the first approach. The first approach to Ramban had based in a Shmos Rabbah, but he had really suggested on his own with a twist. That this was, the Torah mentions Vayifim Vayitzim in Pyro for the first time with Arbe, for the first time Pyro's Bo, because this was the first time historically that Moshe had left. Why? So maybe as a Shmos Rabbah says, he saw that for the first time that Pyro's Hever were shushkining to one another. So you figure, okay, it pays to step away. As Ramban had developed at the beginning, maybe he understood, even before he saw any body language, that this was a message that would hit home. They had already been scared. He knew they had been very scared about Barad. So he tells them that Arbaz is going to finish off the work that Barad began, namely destroying the food supply of Mitzrayim for the coming year. So he had surmised that that they would react in a way they had not reacted in the past. This brings us, this way of thinking does perhaps bring us to a comment of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky in last week's parsha. It may not only be the content of the message, this was a particularly frightening message, there may be something else also. He has a very fascinating comment. If you want to take a look inside, it's Amos Yaakov in Perek Ches Pasuk Dalet. The Ramban at the end of this week's Sedra, the end of Parshas Bo, the last Ramban of Parshas Bo, a very, very famous Ramban, one of the ideas he develops, I think we've mentioned this in the past outside, is that there were multiple purposes, there were multiple objectives. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had more than one goal in bringing the Makos. Certainly, one goal of the Makos was to extract Klal Yisrael from Mitzrayim. But for that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu only needed the last Makos. Another goal was clearly to punish. Another goal was to, at least of the earlier Makos, was to encourage Paro to do the right thing. A third goal was to punish Paro and the Mitzrayim for their Chatan, for the ways in which they had oppressed Klal Yisrael. As HaKadosh Baruch Hu had already told Avraham Avinu, the Brisbane of Sarim, this is part of the plan of Galus, was that there would be a subsequent onesh for the oppressors. But in addition to those three goals of extracting Klal Yisrael, affecting the Geula, and encouraging Paro to let them go, and punishing Paro the Mitzrim, Ramban develops in the last piece in this week's Parsha, Perek Gimel Pasuk Tazayin, that there was also an educational aspect to the Makos. And that's why throughout Va'era and Bo, you keep hearing these Lama'an statements. Lama'an, bring the Maka, Lama'an saper shmi b'chol aretz. Lama'an teida ke'en kamon. Lama'an teida ke'en yashem b'keretz. I'm bringing the Maka so that you will know X, Y, Z. So that you will know A, B, C. As Rabban says, in addition to all the other objectives, objective number four of the Makos was to teach Ikari Amuna. As a matter of fact, Ramban famously goes on to say, that's why we have so many mitzvahs that relate to remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim, both on Pesach and throughout the year. have many mitzvahs on Pesach. Karban Pesach and Matzah and Mor and Sipritzias Mitzrayim, Yisr Chametz and so forth. And we have Tefillin throughout the year. Ramban understands that Mezuzah is also a Zeichlas Yisr Mitzrayim. We have Pidyon HaBen that appears at the end of this week's Sedra together with the Tefillin. Ramban develops the idea that we have many, many eduyos, many, many mitzvahs which are zeichet Yisr Mitzrayim, because remembering Yisr Mitzrayim is absolutely critical, not only for our sense of place and belonging, historical consciousness to know the origin of a Klal Yisrael. It's that, but it's much more than that. It's to teach us not only to know the history, but to remember the lessons of Emunah that those Nisim taught us. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu, again and again, is bringing makas which suspend the laws of nature, nisim geluyim, and he's doing them in order, in very targeted ways, only the mitzvah and not the Jews, and clearly for the purpose of protecting and saving and improving the lot of Klal Yisrael. So clearly that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, and that's why he has the capacity to suspend the laws of nature. Well, and clearly it's not just our, high level, big picture stuff. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who runs the entire universe, is also aware of and cares about and is involved with people on an individual level as well. So there's Yedi and Hashgacha Pratis. And since it was already predicted by the Navi in advance, so that also buttresses our belief in Nevuah. So all the categories of Ikari Amunah, belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Bar Yolam, belief in Nevuah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicates to us, and belief in Yediyah and Hashkacha, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has expectations for us, and he knows what we're up to, and he cares what we're up to, and he reacts and responds, and holds us accountable for decisions that we make. All those Ikari Amunah were demonstrated through the Nisim of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and we keep those lessons of Emunah alive by through all the adios, all the mitzvahs that keep the memories of Yetzias Mitzrayim alive. So that's a very famous Ramban, the closing Ramban in this week's parsha. It's really in many ways the closing Ramban in all these parshas of Galus and Yetzias Mitzrayim. Yaakov Kamenetsky last week, Sedra, Perek Ches Pasuk Daled, adds a twist. Much as when we learned Nevuas Yonah, we saw that there are many different tshuvos going on. There's the tshuva of Anshei Ninveh, but there's also the tshuva of the sailors, and there's also the tshuva of Yonah himself. So like multiple plot lines running in parallel, multiple tshuva plot lines, as it were. Yaakov Kamenetsky implies that we can think about that here as well. It's not only the Jews who are learning. Rabban himself already says it was teaching Emunah to the Jews and to the Mitzrim. Rabbi Kamensky says, and if you learn these parshios carefully, you will see a gradual development on the part of Paro. You can trace that the makos are gradually having an impact. He says, look, after the makos of Dam, Paro doesn't react at all. No impact. After the Makkah of Tzardaya, he calls Moshe and Aaron, and he promises he's going to send the Jewish people, but it's not. Doesn't seem like he necessarily meant it, but at least he's trying to do something. He's negotiating. He's in. As things progress, he seems like he's already becoming, it's not just a question of Min HaSafa V'Lachutz, he's not just saying the right words. There's real internal changes beginning to happen. After the fourth mark of Arov, Yaakov points it out, he seems like he really means it. He's actually, there's some genuineness, some authenticity to his saying, I'm willing to let you go. After all, he begins to give conditions. Well, you can go, I'm willing to let you go, but it should happen here. We need to bring your karbonos. Good, bring your karbonos, but don't leave Mitzrayim. Do it right here. And that, it seems like he's already, he's legitimately coming to the table, and there's something real about this within. And then it continues. He continues to evolve. After Barad, there's an open, explicit Hakara Sachet. He says, I did the wrong thing. But, that's right, that's even more. Aro, it was clear that inside he's thinking this is real. And so he's willing to negotiate. But Barad, he actually says it. He says, I was chote. But it's still only limited because he has hakaras ached. He's verbalizing hakaras ached, but only b'shas yisurin. While the makkah is still in force, he has the capacity to verbalize, articulate his chet. But once the makkah is gone, that articulation is gone as well. And then he says, Yaakov says, here we come to Arbe. Yet another step. He's actually willing to let them go to an extent even before the makkah came. This is Shalom B'Shas Yisur. Right? He actually tells, that's the Vayushav. I'm willing to let you go. Call off the makkah. Call off, this is for the first time that the power is willing to negotiate pre-makkah. But still, it's only after a warning, and it's still, he's not willing to fully fulfill the conditions that Kadosh Baruch Hu is setting through Osh. It's only the adults, only the men, without the animals, and so on and so forth. After, but when once he gets to Choshech, he's ready to send them before the makkah, and he actually does send them, as we know, after makkah's b'choros. So Yaakov points out that there's a real the chinuch objective of the makos, which Ramban describes at the end of this week's parsha. He says you can actually see it working. You can trace the evolution of paro. You can trace the impact that the makos are having. He's coming to recognize. At first, it's, you know, he's saying the right words. He's just trying to negotiate with Moshe Rabbeinu by Tzardeya. But once he gets to Arov, he's beginning to realize this is real. And it grows on him increasingly. And the Amunah sinks in more and more so that he's willing more and more to react in ways that he hasn't reacted up until this point. So that may be a part as well, this idea of Rabbi Yaakov, that you see Paro gradually doing tshuva. So that may also lie behind the phenomenon that the Ramban pointed out. Ramban had pointed out that again, based on the Shmos Rabbah, here for the first time, Vayifin Vayetze Me'im Paro. For the first time, Vayifin Vayetze Me'im Paro. So again, the second approach, Ramban, is it always happened, the Torah only just mentioned it here, but the first approach, Ramban, is in line with the Shmos Rabbah. He had never left before. Perhaps out of a sense of Kvod Malchus. He followed protocol. But if here for the first time, he leaves. Why? So again, the Shmos Rabbah had suggested it must be that he noticed the body language of the Avdei Paro for the first time. They're paying attention, they're listening, they're reacting to him positively. And the Rabbah said maybe it was the message, he understood that this message would impact. He understood that after the pachad of last time, they would be really frightened at the prospect of losing any remaining food, that the wheat will be destroyed also, not only the barley. And maybe we could add, a la Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, that it wasn't only that this message was more frightening, that the prospect of Arbe was more frightening than anything else had been. That there were other makas which were frightening as well. It may also be that he understood that Moshe Rabbeinu was attuned to the progression, the spiritual progression, it seems odd to speak of it, the spiritual growth of Paro that Rabbi Yaakov is tracing the Psukim. Perhaps Moshe was attuned to it. Moshe noticed it. And Moshe perhaps understood not only that the message of Arba would be particularly frightening, but maybe he also intuited that at this point, Paro is at the point, and the people around them are at the point, where they might be ready to melt a little more. So he intuited, Paro is not yet at the point where he could just say to me, you're right, I'll let them go. That will come later. But he is at the point where he could hear it from others. So he's at the point where if I step away, maybe something will happen. They've grown to that point. So it's I think it gets us thinking, even Paro grows. Even Paro could grow. Even Paro could do tshuva. And Paro could grow step by step. That's an important yesod. Even Paro had gradual growth. Baruch Hashem, we're not Paro. But the idea of gradual growth is something that, you know, Mida Tova Merubim Rias Peronius, it's not only a Rasha Gamor who's gradually doing tshuva as he's being struck by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by Makkah after Makkah. It's going to be true of Mida Tova Merubim Rias Peronius. It's going to be true in the lives of happy, healthy, holy Avdei Hashem. That under happier circumstances, yes, we are under the stress of quarantine, but certainly our circumstances are far, far, far better than what's described in the Va'era and Bo. And Ma'aminim also grow gradually. And Ma'aminim also grow step by step. And we should value and cherish our gradual growth. It's sometimes Atzasei Tzahara to say, no, I haven't yet reached goal X, I haven't done anything. That's a very dangerous and counterproductive way of looking at things. Ad kan divrei Yetzer. To say I haven't accomplished everything I wanted to accomplish and therefore it's a failure, to look at everything in a binary way, either I've succeeded or I've failed, so that's Atzas Yetzer. That's not a realistic, accurate way of looking at our growth. Growth is typically gradual. Growth is typically step by step. If I set big goals for myself and I didn't reach them, it doesn't mean I therefore failed. It's often the case if I set big goals, I end up reaching a chunk of it, which I wouldn't have done if I hadn't had those big goals pushing me. I set big goals, I got halfway there. Does that mean I got a 50? 50 is a failing grade. No. If I only would have set smaller goals, I wouldn't have even gotten that far. And it doesn't, therefore, mean I should, okay, it's not binary in the other direction either. I don't say, well, I did 50%, so Gavaldik, I succeeded, okay, now I'm done. No. The balanced approach is what Rabbi Tarfon tells us in Pirkei Avos. I think it's the end of the second parak. Lo alecha melacha ligmar, v'yet harashai libatel himena. That's a carefully balanced approach. That not to beat yourself up for not completing your goals, but neither to therefore stop working towards them and stop aiming at them. Lo alecha melacha ligmar, v'yet harashai libatel himena. HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects me to set big goals, ambitious goals, and with the knowledge that I may not reach those goals certainly not as quickly as I anticipate, but I set those goals, I authentically work to those goals, and I keep consistently pushing. I pick myself up and I push some more. I pick myself up and I push some more. Shevi Yibutzai V'kam, Yet HaRashai Li'batel HaMena. I don't have the right to give up working at it. And through the continual working at it, again and again and again and again, I end up getting closer and closer, accomplishing more and more of what of that melacha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in store for us. I think it's a very, very important and practical lesson that these parshas can teach us through the eyes of the Ramban and Yaakov Kamenetsky. And I would add a second lesson as well, that the Ramban sensitizes us to, and that is sensitivity, exactly that. It's being attuned to the people around me. I'm hopefully not dealing with anyone who's like Paro, but Moshe, in the first approach to Ramban, Moshe was attuned to the people around him. He was picking up on the cues, and he was thinking carefully about what would be the most effective way to handle this interaction. Maybe I should step away so people can think it out. Maybe if I keep pressing and I keep staying in their face, they're not going to be able to say, yes, you're right. Maybe if I give people some, this is the right moment where if I give him some space, he might be able to come back with a better response than if I just keep the pressure on. And so he allows a conversation to ensue in his absence, and then they're able to bring it back and tell him, you know what, We're ready to move forward. And that's a yesod gadol as well. To be thoughtful and reflective about how I interact with the people in my life. It's not always the push, which is going to be the most effective. To think about how to phrase things to people. Even I'm trying, again, Baruch Hashem, nothing nearly as extreme as Moshe and Paro, but there's something in a relationship with someone else that needs. I'm trying to raise something that needs changing. So it is critically important to communicate and not to just keep things, squelch things squashed inside, but at the same time to be thoughtful about how I raise things. To raise things in a way that gives people the space to actually respond positively. The point of raising things isn't just to say, I'm right and you're wrong, and to have made your macha, made your statement. The point is, if you actually want to affect real change in things, so you want to not only talk about stuff, but think about how. Think about what's the most effective way to be sensitive to the people around me, to be sensitive to the fact that people around me also are growing. They're also human beings who are b'vechinas lo alacham lach ligmar. Maybe a person is ready to come to the table, but they don't yet have a full hakar of what's right, what's wrong, but step by step, we could, in the right way, handled correctly, thoughtfully, strategically, we could have a productive conversation. I think these are some of the very practical yesodos that emerged from the Ramban's and Yaakov Kamensky's a careful reading of the Psukim, the sensitivity to the Psukim, and the interpretation of that Shmos Rabbah. Shkai Chavra.